A lot of people are kind of stressed out about the language barrier, so they go to Britain. And when they get to Britain, they realize there's a language barrier. In fact, Oscar Wilde said, America and Britain are two nations divided by a common language. I'm joined today by Chris Ray, who's written a book about the language barrier Americans will experience when they go to Britain. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Your book is called The Septic's Companion. An American has to ask right off the bat, what do you mean by septic? I think of septic tank.
Yep, and you would be right thinking of that. To explain the title, I guess I have to explain a little bit about Cockney rhyming slang.
Okay, so these are the people that live sort of working class down the river in London, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
I think technically it's people who were born within the sound of Bow Bells Church or that kind of thing. So Cockney rhyming slang is a wordplay where you use a two-word couplet to refer to another word which rhymes with the second word of the couplet.
So
to give you an example of ones that are in sort of everyday use in the UK, butcher's hook is used to mean the word look. And you can then say...
Just so, because hook rhymes with look.
Exactly.
It's that simple.
Precisely. Right.
Okay, so give me another example.
So let's say loaf. People use loaf of bread to say head. And I ought to add that you don't necessarily have to use both words of this couplet to mean the other word. So you could say loaf to mean head, and you could say butchers to mean look. Use your loaf is a very common phrase in the UK.
So butcher's hook means look.
Correct.
Give it a butcher's hook, give it a look.
Give it a butcher's, yeah.
And you could then just say, give it a butcher's.
Mm-hmm.
This is like a secret language of the Cockney people. Is that so poor people can communicate without rich people understanding?
It's an interesting one. Cockney rhyming slang is curious because if you ask a Brit for examples of Cockney rhyming slang, they'll give you reams and reams of them. And in actual fact, a lot of them are not in real life usage. A lot of them are just ones that maybe were used a long time ago or that people bring out as examples of Cockney rhyming slang, but they're not in everyday use.
Now, you're Scottish.
I'm Scottish, yeah.
So you grew up in where? Edinburgh or something?
I grew up in Edinburgh. I lived in London for 10 years.
So if you went down into within the earshot of Bow's Bells or whatever, you would hear people in the working class neighborhoods still talking a lot of Cockney stuff?
Oh, yes. I mean, all over the UK, people will use, like the examples I gave you, butcher's loaf. People say Jackie's to mean Jackie Onassis, glasses. Let me put
so
my Jackie's
Jackie
on.
So Jackie Onassis rhymes with glasses. So you could say Jackie Onassis to mean glasses, and then you could just drop the thing that rhymes. So there's really no way you know what the heck you're talking about and just call it Jackie's, which means glasses.
Exactly. And those ones are in use across the UK.
Jackie's.
So, yep.
That's very complicated. Okay, getting back to our original question then, why is your book called The Septic's Companion?
You were right to start with. Septic tank is rhyming slang for yank, which to a Brit is anyone in America.
Septic tank. So you could call a yank a septic tank if you're Cockney, and then if you're really casual with the language, just shorten it by calling it a septic. So Cockney people can call a Yankee a septic.
Correct.
There you go. So this is the septic's companion. Now, just to get a few more of the ground rules here, when we're talking about Britain, it's always confusing. You've got Great Britain, you've got the United Kingdom, and you've got England. What's the difference between Great Britain and United Kingdom?
This is an amusing one because... One of the things that Brits get annoyed about is Americans not understanding which parts of UK, you know, is everything in England? Is Scotland in England? And quite honestly, I have a lot of sympathy because a lot of Brits don't really understand the difference between the parts of the UK either when it comes down to is Northern Ireland in Great Britain and this kind of stuff. So Great Britain or United... So let me start with the United Kingdom. The United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland is a country.
So when you say the United Kingdom, you're talking about the realm, and that includes Northern Ireland.
Correct.
And if you say Great Britain, are you talking not about a political realm, but about an island?
You were talking about England, Scotland, Wales.
So that's island. It's called Great Britain.
Correct.
And you were incorrect to include Northern Ireland in Great Britain because it's just flat out not on that island. It's on an island called Ireland.
Yep, correct.
And the island of Ireland, it has two political zones. It's got Northern Ireland, which is part of the United Kingdom, and the Republic of Ireland, which is 4/5 of the island.
Correct, yeah.
Got it. Okay. I'm just going to ask you a few of these and we'll talk about it. Baltic. Baltic.
Baltic, yes. Very cold.
So is that just because the Baltics are up in the north?
Yeah, I think it really is that simple.
So it's like Baltic out.
Yep.
It's like we could say it's Alaskan out.
Yes.
Similar, but we don't. Bangers. I see that on the menus. You want some bangers?
Yep.
What is that?
And usually in bangers and mash. Bangers are just sausages. The etymology is a little vague, but it likely comes from the fact that the sausages bang if they're sausages with thick skins and you fry them for a little too long.
Or they pop when they're cooking.
Yeah.
Bangers. Oh, okay. Well, you have crackers at Christmas, right? Little toys that pop?
We do.
All right. Now, on a bank holiday, you might have bangers. What's a bank holiday?
To a Brit, a holiday is not only a sort of preset holiday by the state, it's also just any time off work. And a bank holiday is traditionally a day when the banks are shut. And so this is a state holiday when the banks are shut.
So in our country, President's Day, Veterans Day, a day when the banks are shut,
yep.
You would just call a holiday a bank holiday.
Yeah, that's
true. School would be out, banks are closed. It's a holiday, bank holiday.
Yeah, and actually bank holidays have become a little bit more, they're harder to nail down these days. Many people working in the UK will get bank holidays off. Many people will not get bank holidays off, and they'll get a day in lieu instead.
But nobody's beavering on a bank holiday.
Beavering meaning kind of working away busily, of course.
Is that what beavering means?
Yeah, it does indeed, yeah. And I think, again, it's just much like, you know, beaver is kind of chewing away.
So beavers are always like busy as a busy bunny or busy...
Yeah, busy. We could say beaver.
Busy as a beaver. Yeah. Okay, so beavering is working hard.
Yep, it is indeed.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Chris Ray. Chris Ray is a Scotsman, and he's written a book called The Septic's Companion. And septic is, of course, the short for septic tank, which rhymes with yank. So this is The Yankee's Companion, How Americans Can Get Over the Language Barrier. It's just so much fun reading. It's basically a dictionary of words that Americans will encounter, and it will cause them some confusion. Chris, I'd like to just go on a couple of words here just for fun here. Afters. When you're looking on the menu, it says afters. What are we looking at there?
Yeah, you're looking at desserts. It's an interesting one that we don't call appetizers befores, but we do call them starters. And you see that a little bit on U.S. menus, so that's reasonably well known. But
so there's some confusion. An entree, that's our big course.
Yeah, that's true. We would call that a main course.
And what is an entree for you?
An entree is a starter for us.
It's an appetizer.
Yes. There is a little bit of confusion on that one, I'm willing to admit.
That is confusing. Okay. Now, sometimes somebody, it's bad weather out, and they want to put on their anorak, right?
Yeah.
Am I pronouncing that right? Anorak.
You're pronouncing that exactly right.
Okay. So that's what we would call a parka.
Yeah, exactly. It's supposedly, the word anorak also means someone who's a bit kind of nerdy about a particular topic. There's a bit of a debate about the etymology of it, but historically in the UK, we had very tightly controlled radio, and some of the radio stations broadcast from ships offshore to avoid the rules. And the fans of those radio stations would go out and stand on the ships and, to take part in the radio programs, all wearing anoraks. And it's possible that the word anorak, as meaning sort of a nerdy person, came from the description of those fans by the radio program people.
So an anorak is a geek.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he wears a waterproof jacket to be on a radio show.
Yep.
Obviously. And anti-clockwise. Of course, we have counterclockwise.
Yeah, I don't know how we ended up doing that differently.
Anti-clockwise.
But
so
yes.
If you say counterclockwise in Britain, it's not right.
It's the case with a lot of words. If you're American, Brits get a lot of exposure to American television, this kind of stuff. But also with this particular one, it's reasonably easy to guess at. But certainly you'll get a double take if you use that.
So if you're going into a roundabout, you don't go anti-clockwise. Because the British drive on the left side of the road, you're going to go into this, you're not going to stop at a stop sign, and you're going to go clockwise.
Correct.
And if you have an articulated lorry, what does that mean?
A lorry is what Americans would call a big truck. And an articulated lorry is one that's articulated, that's kind of bent in the middle, so that the cab part will separate from the container part.
How about blimey? Where does that come from? Blimey. You hear that on movies a lot.
Yeah, that's true. Or the sort of longer phrase, core blimey, is like an older version of the same thing. I think it's reasonably certain that the etymology of that is from the phrase, God blind me. And that comes from... some sort of version of "May God blind me if this is not so."
Okay, I could see that in medieval times, and then just kind of evolving into blimey.
Yeah, but blimey now is very much an everyday phrase in the UK.
Now, I like to say bloody. It's bloody hot. But when I say that, other people act like I'm cursing or swearing. Is it really a bad word, bloody?
In that context, it's maybe...
It's like damned, isn't it?
It's very like damn in that sense. You'd never put it up in, a presentation you were doing, but, you wouldn't get fired for using it ever, I don't think.
So it's just a strong word.
It's a sort of mild swear word. You'd slap your children if they said it.
Bloody mean of you.
Exactly.
That sort of thing, or that was bloody clever. Where did that word come from, bloody?
I think it's from By Our Lady. This is another
so another God blind me
yeah.
sort of thing. So a lot of the Christian sort of medieval heritage of England survives in its bloody language.
Yep, true.
All right. Bob's your uncle. I love that when people say Bob's your uncle.
Yeah, I hope you're not going to ask me where that comes from because I have no idea.
I just hardly, you know, it makes sense when somebody says it, but I have a hard time explaining it. How do you define, oh, Bob's your uncle?
It's kind of like, you know, you're done, you know, that's it. You know,
it's kind of like, well, obviously, right?
Yeah, kind of. It's like, that's it, complete. You know, once you complete these steps, Bob's your uncle.
I see.
You're done.
So you follow the directions carefully, 1, 2, 3, and Bob's your uncle.
Exactly, yeah. Turn left at the bank, down the road, and, you know, Bob's
and
your uncle.
It's not rocket science. Bob's your uncle.
Yep.
Very nice. Chris, we've just scratched the surface, but it's a fascinating thing, studying the language barrier between Britain and America. Chris has written The Septics Companion. Chris's website is septicscompanion.com. Chris, in Britain, you would say cheers. Does that mean sort of thanks?
Yep, cheers means pretty much thanks. We might also say a little bit more informally ta or ta very much.
Ta. And ta, what would that be from?
I believe it's from Scandinavian word tak,
okay.
Meaning thank you.
All the Scandinavians say tak. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Septic's Companion. Got a picture of a septic tank on the cover of this book. How does that mean a companion for American travelers, the Septic's Companion?
Yes, my wife said this was a bad idea for the book title. I ought to explain a little about something called Cockney rhyming slang in order to describe the title. So a Cockney
okay, so
is...
this is Cockney. So that's the working class downriver from London.
Correct, yeah.
Okay, so they've got their own rhyming slang.
That's true. Okay. And it's much like, in the same way as lots of other kind of subcultures have a slang that they use, this is the London slang, Cockney rhyming slang. And so in Cockney rhyming slang, you will use a two-word couplet to refer to another word, which is the word you're after. And so I would use, the phrase butcher's hook to mean the word look.
So if I'm thinking of look, I think of, if I'm Cockney, I think of a word that rhymes with look that has a word before it. Hook, butcher's hook. Cockney would know I'm talking about look.
That's true. Although it does have to be the particular phrase, butcher's hook. You couldn't think of some other phrase.
So that somebody just said that's the definition.
Yep.
Butcher's
perhaps
hook. All around England, if you say, let's go take a butcher's hook, people will know you're saying, let's go take a look.
Well, actually, you can actually use just the first word of that couplet. And in a lot of cases, that is what you use in order to refer to it. So
okay.
People actually wouldn't really understand butcher's hook if you used it to mean look. They would understand butchers.
So it dissolves into the common
exactly.
language. Now, how does that relate to the title of your book, The Septic's Companion?
Well, so septic, the two-word couplet septic tank, is used in Cockney rhyming slang to refer to the word yank, which to a Brit is anyone from America.
So would you say anybody in Britain, if they said septic's companion, would realize that means the yank's companion?
Oh, yeah, certainly. And this slang has actually gone outside of the UK. So, for example, in Australia, they will use the term septic to refer to Americans, and they further abbreviated it to SEPO.
Americans are called septics. Okay, well, this is one reason to get this book, I guess. Now, I'm always impressed when I travel around Britain how much fun it is. This is basically a glossary of all the words that can cause a language barrier between Americans and Brits. Our phone number is 877-333-7425. Jim's on the phone in Bay City, Michigan. Jim, thanks for your call.
Hey, thanks for talking to me, Rick. I'm traveling with my family. We're going to London, and I was wondering if there was any expressions that we might use here in the States that we may want to refrain from over there.
Oh, interesting.
Anything that may be offensive and we wouldn't know it.
Obviously, we have to be a little bit careful here. There are many of them.
Well, let's have some.
Possibly the one that you're going to come across the worst is the word fanny.
Is that right?
Obviously, in the US, well, we all know what a fanny is, which is your posterior. But in British English, and it never refers to that. And in British English, how can I describe this carefully? Only a lady would have one.
It's a vagina.
Yes.
Oh, I see.
You can say vagina on the radio. But in Britain, a fanny, if you say, because my dad always said, I'm going to spank your fanny. That would not be a nice thing to say in England.
That would be perhaps an inappropriate thing to say in England, yes.
What's another example? Napkin, isn't that a problem?
Napkin, yes, true.
Napkin means tampon.
Yes, and
so in a restaurant, if you ask for a napkin, you're not going to get a serviette.
Well,
which
I think like
want.
Again, in a restaurant, they'll be fine with that.
Okay.
So certainly the fanny one people will be confused by, and another one is the it's just a name, but the name in the US, Randy, does not. It has a real meaning in the UK, which is best equated to kind of the American English. Horny. So
so if your name is Randy and
yeah.
you meet a woman at customs in London at the Heathrow Airport and you say, "Hi, I'm Randy."
Yes.
That's probably not a good thing to say.
If your name is Randy, it's a good idea to invent another name while
Randolph.
Traveling the UK. Yeah, exactly.
Randolph. Oh, suddenly Randy is Randolph. There you go, Jim.
I appreciate it.
So watch out for Fanny and Randy.
Okay.
And besides the fact, a fanny pack, a lot of Americans have a fanny pack.
Yeah, they don't call them that in the UK.
What do you call them in the UK?
They call them bum bags.
Bum bags.
Now, of course, bum in the UK means your posterior. It doesn't mean
I'll never forget being on a cruise ship in the Caribbean, and we had an exercise class, and we had a British exercise leader, and she said, I remember we're laying on the floor, and she goes, kick your bum, kick your bum. And it was just a way to stretch, and I got used to the bum. All right. Jim, we're learning lots here.
Thanks, guys.
Happy travels.
Thank you.
And Barbara's on the phone in Westcliff, Colorado. Barbara, thanks for your call.
Hi, Rick. How are you?
Doing well. We're having fun with the language barrier in Britain here. Do you got a comment or a question?
Yes, exactly. Whenever I'm traveling and I run into someone that speaks with a good British or Australian or New Zealand accent and I don't understand them, I'll say, I'm sorry, I don't speak English. I'm an American. And it always gets a good laugh and then a nod, and then it just breaks the ice and opens up the conversation for much more, good exchange.
It's interesting that, you're belittling yourself here, but in actual fact, in a lot of senses, the English that they speak in America is more similar to classic Old English than some of the English they speak in the UK.
Huh.
So an example of that would be the fact that you spell color C-O-L-O-R, and we spell color C-O-L-O-U-R. C-O-L-O-R is actually the same as the Old English. We had some sort of, variations over time. And you guys, because you're, a bigger country, it takes longer for the language to evolve. You ended up with the old spelling and we got a new one.
Barbara, I think that's a very good idea to say you speak American when you go to England. I think that's a fun excuse to have some fun with local people.
Yeah, exactly. It really just opens things up and lets them realize that, yes, they're speaking a little bit differently, and they may not understand some of the things that I say, too.
All right. Well, happy travels.
Thank you.
Thanks. Walter's on the phone in San Francisco. Hi, Walter. Thanks for your call.
I actually had the opportunity to move and live in London for about 4 or 5 years in the early 80s. And I remember one of my friends gave me a book by George Mikesh, How to Be an Alien. And I wonder if you've ever heard of that book. Because it's quite a humorous thing, sort of the differences between the language and as a foreigner, how one tries to fit in.
Interesting. No, it sounds interesting. I haven't heard of it, actually.
And what did you learn from it, Walter?
The one thing I probably learned most from it, well, at that end, also working there, is that as an American or as a foreigner, to be very careful, because the English can use language as an offensive weapon, and to really be kind of careful.
The English can use language as an offensive weapon. That's interesting. What's your take on that, Chris? There is a biting kind of wit with the English. They can put you in your place even without you knowing it, and everybody else on the bus goes, wow, that was quite an insult.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of kind of wordplay involved in chit-chat in the UK. My wife is Greek, and Greek is a very emotive language. People always sound like they're having an argument in Greek.
Right.
When we first got together, my wife and I thought that she was having an argument with the family, and the conversation would end up in tears, and I'm sure something terrible would happen, and they were just talking about the weather. And I think, like, English to American is reasonably similar to that. There's a lot more kind of wordplay and a lot more kind of aggressive kind of banter than there is in the US. People in the US are quite careful, certainly up here in the Northwest, are quite careful about how they appear to other people. And it's less of that in the UK, I think.
All right, Walter. Well, good luck with your communicating and your travels.
Well, I'll keep working on it. Thank you.
All right. I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Chris Ray. Chris has written a fun little book called The Septics Companion, obviously, the Yankees Companion. Chris's website is septicscompanion.com.
Yeah, the website's kind of an ongoing thing. The book is sort of, in a sense, like a spin-off of the website. Like, I've been running the website for 12 years, and the book is like an imprint of the website.
Chris, I want to go back to my word list here. Now, we have, if you're playing football and you want to protect the area between your legs, you wear a cup.
This is what we would call American football.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, even in English football, I think it'd be nice to have a cup. What do you call it?
We would call that a box.
You wear a box,
mm.
Not a cup.
No.
Huh, you drink out of a cup.
We drink out of a cup. You could drink out of a box if you like, I suppose.
I'd rather not drink out of a box in England. We all have a lot of garage sales. You guys have smaller houses, so you limit it to the back of your car, right?
Yes, car boot sales. I think they're an institution reasonably similar to garage sales, although possibly there's a little bit more of a kind of low-class feel to car boot sales.
Okay. But, I mean, it's an interesting thing. Every society has to have a place where you get rid of your junk and try to turn it into some hard cash. So
yep.
You have it in a, what do you call it again? Car boot.
Oh, yes, of course. Sorry, I forgot. I've been here for a while now, but I forgot. The boot is, of course, the trunk of the car.
Well, of course, yeah.
The boot. Of course. Well, so I think
trunk,
it came
you
from,
put a trunk in the boot.
Yes, I think boot came from bootlocker. When the trunk of your car was very small and all you put in it was your boots. And so...
Is that right?
Yeah.
Huh. Now, I offend my bus drivers when I'm a tour guide in England by calling them bus drivers. Because they like to be a coach driver.
Ah, interesting.
See, coach is a higher class. A bus is, a bus runs you around the city, I guess, but a coach is what tourists take around the countryside.
Yeah, that's true. A bus would be on a scheduled route, and a coach would be something that you chartered.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about eating and drinking. Of course, you got this yellow stuff on all the desserts.
Custard?
Yeah.
Well, it's, a natural thing to put in a dessert.
Anything. You just dribble some yellow sauce on it, and it's sweeter, right?
Yeah, I will say, the Brits are good at a lot of things, but food isn't really one of them.
So custard is it.
It's custard.
Your generic sweet topping.
Yep.
All right. And if you want to have a drink with that, you might have a cuppa.
You might have a cuppa, which is, of course, a cup of tea.
Not a cup of coffee? And when you say a cuppa, you refer to a tea, huh?
Yeah, I think when you offer someone a cuppa, they could say, I'd like coffee, and that would be fine. But by default, it would be kind of tea,
Now, I've got a friend who ran a museum in London, the Tea and Coffee Museum. And he was so passionate about the death of good tea when they brought in tea bags. And the tea bag came along with the commercial television. And people needed to make a cuppa during a commercial break. So they had a tea bag that could actually brew tea as quick as a commercial. With the advent of commercial television, we got these bloody tea bags, and he said that was the last good cup of tea, unless you're going to go without the tea bag. I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Chris Ray, who writes a book called The Septic's Companion, and I just have so much fun with this because I thought I spoke English, and you go over there, and somebody might point on the ground and say, there's a dog end.
Yes.
A dog end?
It's not what you'd think.
No.
It's the end of a cigarette.
So we like say it's a butt.
A cigarette butt.
So they'd call it a dog end.
Yeah.
And what's a dog's breakfast?
A dog's breakfast is something that you've made a bit of a mess of. Like you might regard, something that you've written poorly or something that you produced badly as being a dog's breakfast.
So if you go to England without a good itinerary, your vacation might be a dog's breakfast.
Exactly. Perfect usage. Or you could say dog's dinner as well.
A dog's dinner?
Yep.
Dog's dinner or dog's breakfast?
Yeah, I think to dogs it's all the same kind of thing.
All right. And if your trip's in a state of disarray, if it's just one dog's breakfast, it's easier to get swindled and somebody might diddle you.
They might diddle you, yes. That's
and I don't want to be diddled when I'm away from home.
Exactly. That's just kind of like a kind of friendly swindle.
You've been diddling me.
Yeah, exactly.
Stop diddling me.
You'd be more likely to be diddled out of like a pound or two than £10,000.
Okay. Now, when we're talking about language, of course, English is the Queen's language, the Queen's English. And you've got the Gaelic languages, the old Celtic languages.
Yep.
Historically, people spoke Scottish, Irish, and Welsh. What's the status of those three languages these days?
The honest answer about Irish is I'm not very sure. Scottish Gaelic is really kind of a dead language. I think there's something like 10,000 Gaelic speakers in Scotland. And really, that's people who speak Gaelic at all.
It's like a parent deciding to raise their kid speaking Esperanto or something. I mean, like, what good is it?
Yeah, I think you might find Esperanto is more popular, actually. And no, so this is speaking Gaelic as a second language.
There's nobody whose first language is Scottish.
I mean, there is, but you could probably count them on your hand.
So that's sort of a cultural oddity. But on the other hand, in Wales, there's people who do speak Welsh as their first language quite routinely.
Yeah, Wales is very much a bilingual country. And the further you get into the country in Wales, the more likely you are wandering around Wales to hear people talking Welsh on street corners and this kind of stuff.
Now, I hear there's a big movement in Scotland afoot to make the signs bilingual, one in Scottish and one in English. What's with that?
Yeah, Gaelic for the Scots is a bit of a hot button in that the Scots are a bit of a sort of rowdy nation. They don't like being, at the end of the day, England is the greater part of the United Kingdom and the Scots feel they're under the English a bit. And the language is a bit of it's an emotive thing more than actually a practical thing. And so there's a lot of Gaelic television programs in Scotland, for example. But really, they're pandering to a very small number of Gaelic speakers.
They actually have Gaelic media, huh, in Scotland?
Yep.
Now, when you guys saw the movie Braveheart, that's freedom, right? Does that kind of make Scottish people feel really great?
I think it makes us feel special about Mel Gibson.
Mel Gibson. But that must resonate with Scottish people because you are subjugated
true.
By the English.
Yeah, I think some of the anti-English feeling in Scotland, and there's a lot of genuine anti-English feeling in Scotland, but in the UK as a whole, there's a lot of kind of playful rivalry between the nations. So people will pick on, you know, English people at work in a sort of jokey fashion. Scots have a word for English people, Sassenachs, which basically, you know, it's their derogative term for the English. And
Sassenach?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I actually don't know what it means. It's Gaelic, though.
You just call him a Sassenach, huh?
Yeah.
Now, I've heard that if somebody is on a British sports team or something, and they happen to be Scottish, if they screw up, oh, they're Scottish. And if they're a champion, ah, they're British.
Yes, yes. Sadly, that's true. There's no successful Scottish sports team really exists apart from curling. Actually, that's another interesting thing about the Britain versus the countries through regions that encompass Britain is that sport-wise, Scotland, England, and Wales often get their own teams for things. And in kind of politics and this kind of thing, it's the UK. So as I say, it's easy to become confused by them. I do feel sorry for.
So England will give you a little independence when it comes to sports.
Yeah, a bit.
But not when it comes to politics. Although you have your parliament now in Scotland for the first time since 1707. The Scottish have their own parliament. What's with that?
Well, of course, the ex-Prime Minister, Tony Blair, was educated in Scotland. So I think he's a little affinity for Scotland. And there was a feeling that some of the Scottish nationalist problems that were occurring could actually be alleviated by giving the Scots some control over stuff.
So a little bit of bonsai democracy. It looks good in the window and cut it back if necessary.
Well, I mean, they do have some control. It's reasonably similar to how the state governments work versus the federal. So they can control taxes within a certain leverage and they have some control over education, this kind of stuff. So
there's a strong spirit in Scotland.
Yeah, no, that's certainly
true. There's so much more to talk about. I've been studying English with Chris Ray. Chris writes a book called The Septic's Companion. His website is septicscompanion.com.
It's certainly true that having moved to the US myself, I noticed that a lot of Americans when they go to Britain are truly gobsmacked at the language barrier they hit.
Gobsmacked?
I mean, a gob is a word for mouth. Smack obviously means smack, so...
It's one of those, I could have had a V8 moments when you get over there.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, I think we've contributed to sussing it out here.
I like that. Sussed it out. Figuring it out with Chris Ray, The Septic's Companion. Chris, coming up to this interview, I could say I was having kittens, wondering how it was going to be.
Yeah,
having
true.
Kittens. Isn't that fun? What does that mean?
Yeah, it just means you're very nervous about something. I don't know whether having kittens makes cats very nervous, but certainly that's what it means. We also say...
If you're like uncertain about something.
You would say like a cracking laugh or a good crack is another one.
Good crack. But this has been great fun. Thanks a lot, Chris.
Thank you.
Cheerio.
Cheers.
Ta.
Thank you.
So in England, you just drop the K. Ta. Ta very much.
Thank you.